All right,
a command D.
Let's get on with command D. Command D. I forgot. Now you're bringing it in, or I'm bringing it in.
I'll bring it in. Screw it. You ready?
Go ahead. Yeah, have fun.
This whole city used to be filled with humans, families, brothers, fathers. My grandfather worked for a secret organization. When the disaster struck, he sealed us in a protected chamber called Command D. And yeah, that's how I got my name. He and I were the last survivors. We stretched the supplies as long as we could. We had a few books, some info reels. He taught me all he could. Until he was my only companion. My only friend. His final words were, "You were the last boy on Earth, Commandy. For the sake of humanity, you must survive."
If we're going where I think we are, I doubt any of us will survive.
Journey with them now. Back to the bins.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another trip into a dystopian future on this continuation of our series going over Command D, the last boy on Earth, in a post-apocalyptic world where animals talk and walk upright, and men are but animals and slaves. I'm David A. Pastorella with my animal sidekick here, Mr. Paul the Producer Spataro.
They tell me that I am, as Dr. Bill would say, a human.
You are the most human.
So
post-great disaster, anyway.
I am somewhere in the intelligence level of the post-great disaster non-commandee humans. So it's been a little while. We've had a little break from our commandy retrospective, but I'm glad to be getting back into it. And we have two issues that we're covering today that kind of pick up from where we left off. And after these two, the story is continuing. So we're getting a little bit away from the one and done stories, at least for the time being.
Sounds to me like you're hopping with excitement to cover this.
Like a big grasshopper.
Yeah. Have a devil of a time with this one.
If people haven't read the book, they're going to be saying, what are these two idiots talking about? So what are these two idiots talking about?
We will be covering this exciting episode, issues 12 and 13. And I have book one. Should we jump into this?
Well, you have book 12.
Let's hop into this. Ready?
All right. Click, click.
Issue number 12 is cover dated December 1973. I was a mere 2 years old when this came out, on the cusp of two, with an on-sale date of September 11th, 1973. As most of this, if not all of this series, written, penciled, and edited by Jack Kirby. The inker is Mike W. Royer. Chapter 1, Commandy, the Last Boy on Earth. They were real creative with this chapter. In the twisted future world, that is Earth after the great disaster, Commandy hides from two leopard pirates in the menagerie that is Sacker's department store. For some reason in my mind, I keep thinking Slacker instead of Sacker. Sacker sells everything that it has looted from the ruins of man, and Commandy will bring a handsome price if he can be added to the inventory. As Commandy shuttles back and forth between warehouses, gathering all he needs to escape, he passes a display of portraits, including one of all people, Adolf Hitler. and he wonders what this terror of the world would think of his status now, as he's marketed as a funny animal picture. In this world where men are just animals to be hunted, herded, and sold, Commandy ducks out of sight as the leopards bring a herd of human slaves through. Commandy vows to try and free them before he escapes. But right now, he has a rendezvous with the devil. Unfortunately, Commandy is spotted as he approaches the warehouse. Chapter 2, The Devil and Mr. Saka. As results of the great disaster have been many, varied, and exceedingly strange. From some area unknown to Commandy, the seafaring leopards have brought back a nightmare specimen of life. They call it a devil. In reality, Jiminy Crickets is a gigantic grasshopper, which Commandy intends to use in his escape. He saddles the devil, who he discovered to be friendly, and names him Click Clack. As Commandy prepares to mount his steed, Click Clack goes on a spree of destruction. Commandy realizes that Click Clack thinks it's a game, and by playing a game, they can escape. Suddenly, they find themselves cornered by leopards, who are as surprised by Commandy's ability to speak as anything. After a brief and futile scuffle, Commandy is snared and promised a few beatings to teach him respect for his betters. The devil is corralled with the repellent powder as the mysterious and hooded Mr. Sacker arrives, warning his men to be careful with his valuable animals. Commandy tells Sacker that he can talk and reason as well as Sacker because he is a man, but he can't make out what Sacker is because of his hood, but he must be really ugly. Sacker tells him to guess. Commandy reasons that since he sells weapons to anyone, sells loot to anyone, and sells slaves, that he can only be a snake. Sacker is impressed and has his hood lowered to reveal that he indeed is a snake. Chapter 3, The Beautiful Dead. Just when things can't get more surprising, it is revealed that the person who lowered Saka's hood is none other than Flower, Commandy's beautiful, topless, and supposedly deceased love interest. Commandy saw her die and saw her buried. How awkward is this? Commandy is shocked and shouts, "Flower, you're alive! How could this be?" The girl grabs Commandy by the hair and demands, "Where, Flower? Where you see my sister?" Oof! What a 70s twist. If only she'd been in the shower, it would have been even funnier. This girl is Spirit. She and Flower are from the same litter, and Flower had run away. Commandy must break the bad news. Flower is dead. And strangely, even Sacker expresses shock and what appears to be somewhat remorse. Sacker orders his men to untie Commandy and declares that Commandy is a sensitive animal, and he'll trust Commandy if Commandy trusts him. Sacker offers limited freedom in exchange for total loyalty. Commandy questions, what if he prefers total liberty or death a la Patrick Henry? Sacker counters that Commandy should give his proposal a try and live longer. Plus, he will put Commandy in charge of training the devil. Commandy promises nothing, but for the present, he'll make no attempt to escape. Sacker responds that Commandy will stay if he treasures the memory of Flower. Commandy trains with click-clack, leaping chasms and dodging gunfire, racing around what was once an underground garage. Commandy actually enjoys it and finds the Leopards rooting for him. Soon he learns that the Leopards intend to wager on him in the upcoming race. Commandy learns from Spirit that Sacker is somewhat of a benevolent master, and Flower only fled to escape the brute human Bull Bantam, who has a pedigree and is a well-trained prized property. Sure enough, Commandy and Bull come to blows. Bull is made the fool and vows to kill Commandy in the race. Commandy learns that the race he's training for is a winner-take-all race, and only the winner will survive. Finding out he will have to kill other men to survive is enough for Commandy to make his break for freedom. However, he's soon cornered by armed Leopards and vows, "Shoot me if you want, but I'm not riding for Sacker or anyone else." A large poster advertises, "The Sacker's Company invites its customers to the sweepstakes at Hialeah Racetrack. To be continued in Hell at Hialeah." And that's issue 12, my friends.
I really like this one. I got a big kick out of this as I was reading it. I mean, you know, you have to take Commandy at where it's coming from each time. You know, there's a lot of silliness that goes on here. But Sacker, I love that he's a snake, and I get a big kick out of it. Not only is he a snake, but he seems to be a snake with at least a thin level of honor to how he handles things.
Yeah.
So he's more complex than he could be. Now, I'm guessing, and I don't know, but I'm guessing that Sacker will ultimately be like the, what is it, the story of the, was it the frog and the scorpion? Where he's got to be true to his nature, ultimately. So I think it's at some point Sacker's going to turn out to be, you know, not trustworthy. But I think, like I said, I think he's at least more complex than just a, you know, run-of-the-mill villain.
Right.
He's almost like, you know, the kingpin of crime. You know? But he's a snake. So it's just a cool concept as far as I'm concerned.
Sacker, you're a snake. Yeah.
I also feel like Kirby may have like thought the same thing that we thought, and thought to himself, you know what, I killed off Flower too quickly, so how can I bring her back? Well, you know what, I'll have her identical twin sister, and I'll introduce her as a character.
How many times has that been used in things that the twin shows up?
Yeah, well, in soap operas, that's a well-known trope. But I kind of feel like, you know, like that wasn't planned all along. It's not like he said, "Oh, I know I'm going to go for this and that, you know, I'll kill this one off, but I'm going to introduce the twin sister." I think he did it, and then he realized, "You know what? I was too quick to kill off the first one. So let me create something here." What do you think?
Hey, yeah. Well, also, if it's a litter, there could be three or four Flower replicants out there. So yeah, I think you're right.
I try not to get too far ahead with the spoilers and stuff, but I have seen covers in the series that are much later, and this character is around for a while. I don't know if she's going to come and go, or if she's going to be around, you know, consistently. I'm guessing she's going to come and go because I don't see her being in every single issue as a co-star.
I think it was a good idea to bring not the character, but a very similar character in.
I think it's interesting that the creation of Click-Clack, the giant grasshopper, I'm not sure how that factors into the mutations that are going on, you know, with the animals being able to talk, but, you know, he's not Click-Clack isn't able to talk, but he seems to be a more intelligent grasshopper, and he's a giant grasshopper for reasons that I don't understand.
Well, it could be along the lines of he lacks the ability, you know, the vocal abilities. It'll turn out maybe he can communicate in some other way.
Yeah, I guess, you know.
I'm just guessing.
Not having read ahead, you know, the possibilities are endless. Just as a by the way, to change the subject for a minute, I got a text from Scott about a week ago. He was at a show and he asked me which commandees I was missing, and I was down to just one issue, and he found it there. So as soon as I get that from him, I will have the complete run.
Congratulations on that.
I'm very excited about having it. I love closing out these runs. Although it, you know, does, the good part is it you search for them and you find them. The bad part is it eliminates the search, because the search is fun.
You'll have to move on to something else.
Yeah, well, it is, you know, the biggest problem, I mean, I know we're going afield here, but the biggest problem is as I fill the needs with books like this that are going to be, you know, $2, maybe $3 each, I eliminate those off my list, and then the ones that are left are the ones that are really expensive. So those are going to be harder to fill because I'm not willing to spend huge bucks on them. But back to Commandy, you know, the whole Sacker's department store. I love the fact that Hitler was put in there as a funny animal.
Yeah, right.
I thought that was very clever.
The backgrounds in these books are always great because they have tons of Easter eggs. You know, all the... Is that Nefertiti on page 2? You see the bottom panel, page 2. Isn't that some Egyptian god or something?
You know what? I was looking in the wrong spot. Hang on.
Right under the picture of Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that thing being a big deal in the 70s. Like people wearing emblems with that on it.
Yes, I've definitely seen what you're talking about. But whether that is in fact it, I would say you're probably right. That's probably where Kirby got that. He's also got, I guess, the Centurion on the right.
Yep.
It looks like a maybe a Greek philosopher,
Plato, Aristotle. That.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's all the way to the far left.
Yeah, I can't make out what that is. But it's all antique statuary of wildlife.
Yeah. And I guess that, you know, that's the big joke of it all.
But, you know, again, the leopards are so surprised that Commandy, he speaks. Yeah, but every person we've met almost speaks. Yeah, Spirit speaks.
They may not be as articulate as he is, but they all speak. That's one inconsistency in the way it's presented, definitely.
It'd be like if your dog started speaking, but he had bad grammar. You wouldn't be like, oh, well, look, he doesn't speak.
No, well, put it this way. If my dog started to speak and had bad grammar, and I got used to it, and then I started finding other dogs that spoke and had bad grammar, but then one dog came along who was a little bit more intelligent, I wouldn't say, oh, my God, you could speak.
It was like Mr. Peabody arrived.
And his pet boy, Sherman.
Right, exactly.
But, you wouldn't be surprised that the dog could speak at that point. You'd just be surprised that he's smarter than the other dogs.
Right.
But even that wouldn't blow you away. That would just make you say, oh, look at that, he's smarter.
It's such a leap, you know, to go from an inability to speak to, you know, bad English. You know what I'm saying?
I always go back to Planet of the Apes with these books because that's what inspired this. And, you know, in the first movie, you know, the shock was that Taylor could speak at all. And there were no other humans that they showed that could speak. And then, you know, eventually Nova lets out a word, but, you know, but it takes time before that even happens. And there's no other humans that can speak as that's going on. And then, you know, in the new movies that have come out, which obviously didn't inspire this because there's so much after Kirby even passed away, but they've given, you know, the whole explanation of, you know, where they show how the humans lost the ability to speak, you know, physically.
And that was, I think, a good take with what they did with that.
Yeah, I thought so as well. I'm a big fan of the movies that they've come out with in the reboot. You know, it was like there were the original five that I love. Then there was the Tim Burton one, which is just, you know, a huge disappointment, really. And then once they started again with Rise of the Planet of the Apes, the four movies that came out since then, I'm a big fan of all of them.
Come on, you didn't get a kick out of apes driving Crown Vic police cars?
No. I guess the other aspect of this story is that the whole big race thing, and we get introduced to what's his name, the bully guy, Bull Bantam.
Bantam.
Yeah, and he almost looks, you know, he's definitely drawn as a, you know, Kirby bully. Commandy takes him out with a ladle. So it's interesting, but you know, now he taking him out for that short time has just created a major enemy for Commandy.
And that is a plot of how many books that we've gone through with Commandy.
So, what else we got on this?
I think that about sums it up. I'm curious. Hialeah, is that? I'm just curious if that's a real place. I had some device to look it up on.
That is it. I've heard of that. That is a real racetrack, Hialeah, but I don't know exactly where it is. If only we had a device to look it up on. In fact, I'm going to try and do that immediately. Because this makes for fascinating podcasting when we
Life on the Edge. Florida? It's in Florida.
Yeah, maybe that we can have Dr. Bill race a giant grasshopper down there.
Get me Dr. Bill on the horn. We need some answers now.
Well, if Dr. Bill wasn't so busy with work all the time. Stupid work.
Me hate work.
So, you want to rate this?
Let's see. Hang on, let me get back here. Come on. Okay. The cover is wild with the. It has a humongous click clack on it. With the, I know it's supposed to be Commandy snaring him to ride him, but it looks more like he's getting ready to hang click clack. It clearly looks like a noose around his neck. They're making some kind of a crazy getaway with a bunch of leopards in pursuit. There is no background on this cover whatsoever, in my opinion. Just an orange blending into yellow background, which I don't find very impressive. Click clack doesn't quite even look like a grasshopper to me on the cover. He just looks like a humongous bug monster. Commandy, yeah. probably is the best part of the cover. But for overall, I'm going to give this a C minus, and I feel I'm being generous with it. The interior art's good. It's got these really detailed backgrounds. I think it's well drawn. You know, for Kirby, I'm not a big Kirby fan. No, it's sacrilege to some folks, but hey, to each his own. But I would say the cover is definitely not as good as the interior art. And I would give the interior art, I'd say a C plus. The story's kind of weird and fun. It's in the style that we're used to. I really get a kick out of the whole Sackers thing, the play on the words Sacker, all the little Easter eggs in the background. I like quote-unquote return of Flower in the form of Spirit. And it's setting us up for some excitement in this great race that's coming at some point in the future that I can't imagine when we're going to get to that. But the story itself, to me, it's a solid B. So I'm going to give an overall grade to this of a B minus.
Okay. I'm a little different from you. I like the cover. I think the cover's pretty cool. You know, we got introduced to Click-Clack last issue, but in very brief form of actually getting to get a feel for it as a character. So you don't know exactly what's going on here. You know, he's got the rope around Click-Clack's neck, so to speak, and you know, you get all the leopards behind in their pirate outfits, and I thought that the coloring is effective, the blue wording on the, you know, on the title, and then the red almost sunset, because it's changing from red to orange to yellow as it goes down. I thought it made it pop a little bit. So I thought the cover was pretty decent. So I was going to give that a B. I was going to, and I am going to give it a B.
You should give it.
I'm actually, you know what? I'm giving it a B. In fact, I'm going to give it an A plus just to screw you. No, I'm going to give it a B. The interior art, you know, I am a fan of Kirby's art, unlike yourself. And I think this is pretty cool. It's pretty well done. No images particularly bothered me in the way they were rendered. I liked the way Sacker looks in it. I think it's pretty cool. So I'm going to give the interior art a B as well. And the story, I think it's really fun. And it's giving us, you know, it gives us back a replacement for Flower. I keep forgetting her name is Spirit. I keep forgetting that.
She goes on to be in the G.I. Joe team, you know.
and much like Flower, she does not understand what a bra is, and you know, that's fine. Or a top for that matter. She really her only clothing choice is a pair of panties. And red silk ones at that. So it's an interesting choice for a book that's put out there for kids. But I think the story resolve, you know, it brings back that character effectively, and I think it's pretty cool, the whole relationship that's created between Commandy and Click-Clack, as well as, you know, what's his name, Sacker, who, like I said, I think is kind of, you know, in the brief experience we have with him, he seems to be more than a two-dimensional character, so I kind of like that. So overall, I thought the story also a B. So I'm getting, you know, all around B's all around, and I'm going to give the book a B. I also like, you know, that we're given the, you know, what's his name, Bull Bandom, to be an adversary to Commandy, and you know, he looks like a basically a Roman gladiator that would be taking you out. So cool stuff as far as I'm concerned.
He looks like the guy who was kicking sand in the ants for, what was it, Atlas Gym or something like that.
The insult that made a man out of Mac.
Right.
So moving on to Commandy number 13, which has a cover date of January of 1974 and a 20-cent price tag. The cover, again, is by Jack Kirby and Mike Royer, and it shows Commandy being unceremoniously thrown into an animal compound by some leopards. The story is titled Hell at Hialeah, and it's written, penciled, and edited by Jack Kirby, inked and lettered by Mike Royer. The story opens with Commandy on the track and being told to get out of the way by a leopard riding a horse. He responds with the exceedingly clever retort of, "Go fry an egg, you dumb, dumb leopard. I hope that the horse throws you." He's chased from the track into the stands, where another anthropomorphic feline flushes him out, and Commandy promptly zocks him and is ready to face off with a leopard when the race begins and Commandy starts being trampled. But he's pulled from the track by the leopard guards. He battles for his freedom, but is eventually held at bay by superior numbers. He's brought to the animal compound shown on the cover, where he's confronted by Bull Bantam again, who declares that he will kill Commandy in the race. Commandy questions Bull's fortitude and declares that he won't race. He again reaches into his vast supply of clever comebacks and tells Bull to go jump into a tub of molasses. Spirit, who we met last issue, is Flower's identical sister, tells Commandy that she will be the prize to Bull if Bull wins the race. But Commandy tries to convince her to escape. She does not want to do so because she is too loyal to Mr. Sacker. First, it's time for a Tweeler race. Tweelers are apparently two-wheelers, as in motorcycles. Commandy borrows some binoculars to watch the race as the slaves compete for a strawberry shortcake, and a death race is on, and the combatants fire at one another with mass casualties. Commandy goes to the pen where the leopards are attempting to keep Click-Clack, the giant grasshopper, at bay. Commandy mounts him and tries to ride him to freedom. They leap over the compound wall. Bull Bantam gloats that they will make Commandy race, and Spirit slaps him. But he plants a big kiss on her and tosses her aside before calling for his armor for the race. Helicopters trail Commandy and give him a gun with ammo for the race while herding him and Click-Clack back onto the track, but not before Click-Clack takes out a helicopter. As the race proceeds, Click-Clack takes out two racers by kicking them on either side of him and then vaults into the lead, going over a massive crevice and then a wall of flame. But he's hit by fire from a gun turret, staggers, but counterattacks. As Commandy is upset, but the crowd calls for them to finish the race. Commandy is defiant and is caught in a lariat, which turns out to be thrown by none other than Bull Bantam, riding a massive bison. We're implored to come back next month for Winner Takes It All. Well, Winner Takes All, rather. It's not the ABBA song. So, my first thought when I read this is, how come the bison and the horses aren't intelligent?
Mm-hmm. Me too.
So, other than that, which jumped out at me, I thought, pretty cool. This is another fun story, and it, you know, it picks up right where the previous one left off, and it leaves us with a bit of a cliffhanger. So, you know, it makes you want to get to the next issue, see how this thing gets resolved. I thought the artwork in it was pretty much on point with what we've had so far. I thought it was, you know, decent quality, unless you're not a Kirby fan, which I don't know anybody who isn't.
They'd have to be crazy.
Pretty much. And I thought the story was cool. It's you know, the biggest thing about it that I sit there and say, really, did that happen, is that they got him back into the race so easily. Other than that, I thought it was all pretty cool. I really enjoyed reading this one. I was a little surprised we didn't have an appearance by Sacker. You know, he's mentioned frequently, and they're following his orders, which is why they never really shoot at Commandy, because they wanted him in the race. But we don't actually see Sacker at all in this.
Because, you know, he gets paid a lot to show up, so they have to use him sparingly.
Well, you know what? It's really difficult to get a good stunt double for Sacker, too.
That too. You know what I kept hearing in my head? Do you remember when there was a cartoon called The Wacky Races?
Oh, yeah.
I keep hearing that music playing in my head while they're conducting this race.
It would be funny if Click-Clack laughed like Muttley.
Yeah, exactly. I thought this was a lot of fun. You know, I almost didn't think it was going to be as much fun as it was. But, you know, it had enough references for me. Like I said, the Wacky Races concept. I kept thinking of there was a Bugs Bunny episode.
Yeah, oh, yeah. With the mechanical bunny that he starts chasing.
Right. I find the technology level for the animals seems to be increasing.
In what respect?
That they have helicopters now. Didn't we have, right? You know, it was like the lions were the peak of civilization, and they had like biplanes, right? Did they have biplanes?
I think yes, they did. I think you're right. Definitely, they were definitely prop planes. And it's, now you get the motorcycles that, that humans are riding.
Right.
Very, very Mad Max-ish.
The costumes, predating Mad Max. Right. Yeah. Maybe Mad Max ripped them off.
I don't think I've never seen, what is it, like Death Race 2000 or something like that is the name of the movie.
I've only seen like clips online. I've never seen the movie. But yeah.
But that might be contemporary with this.
It could be. I don't even know what year that came out.
I've never seen it, so I know it by title alone.
Well, maybe it's a watch for Is It Jaws? But that's another show, folks. But yeah, I it seems like to me the technology's going up. You know, you could maybe scavenge vehicles and, you know, cobble things together. But multiple helicopters seems like quite a leap forward.
You know what they really need to establish is animals who have studied this technology and mastered it so that they can do, you know, repairs and upgrades and whatever. Because if you don't have that, I mean, how long are you going to last with the, with this equipment that existed before you were even sentient? You well, know, I mean, about... you take a car and you don't change the oil for 5-6 years. Sooner or later, it's going to seize up on you.
Well, what about the gasoline? I don't think gasoline lasts forever. I think yeah. Once it's refined, it goes bad.
I think it's fairly easy to establish that there's, you know, some breed of animal that has developed the ability to, you know, handle mechanics.
Somewhere there's an oil rig with a bunch of animals working on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would, if I were Kirby, which I am not, and I was plotting upcoming issues, I would have probably a storyline that would take place on an oil rig, and you'd see whatever breed of animal working on the vehicles and whatever, and you'd show that they have developed the ability to maintain these things.
But I found it to be a lot of fun. This was really amusing.
One of the interesting things when I read this was in the letters page, there's a letter, and I misread it, because it's from apparently from Keith Griffin, and I thought it was from Keith Giffen, the eventual comic writer and artist. And for all I know, it is him, and they misspelled his name. But his letter, if I want to read it, it's, "Dear Jack, watch out. The quality of Commandy is slipping. The storylines seem very mundane, padded, and uneventful. The art is just enough to get by. The full-page splashes take up too much room, and the pictures in the letter col are a waste of space. Just a waste. Word of warning. Shape up. Keith Giffen, Mobile, Alabama. And, you know, I should have looked up Keith Giffen to find out where he's from, or where he was from. He sadly passed away this year. Because if he's from Mobile, Alabama, then I would say, hey, you know what? It's probably the same guy. And they just misspelled his name. But on the other hand, maybe not. I don't know. But he's very critical.
Yeah, well, maybe he goes on to be an editor.
He's talking to one of the, you know, the all-time greats of comic books and saying, shape up.
Well, I like the cover on this too, to be honest. I think this is one of the best covers. I just find
cool, and it's giving us something that we're getting in the story too, which I always like.
And the look,
Keith Giffen was from Queens, New York, and he was then relocated to Tampa, Florida. So I guess he is not the person who wrote this letter. Keith Griffin wrote it. Maybe he's related to Peter Griffin.
He's a very angry guy, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to get feedback now. You know, I was listening to your show because I really liked Commandy, and I wrote in.
Yeah, I wrote in 50 years ago, and now you're criticizing me for it.
So, and we'll just tell you to go yourself.
Or I'll tell him to what is it? Go fry an egg, you dumb dumb leopard.
Oh my god.
It's the one thing, you know, Kirby was not an expert at dialogue. So I agree with you. I think this cover is pretty cool. I think it's like you almost feel the kinetic energy of Commandy being thrown towards you. I think the door is a little strange because it's swung open and it appears that the sign that says Animal Compound Do Not Enter is on the interior of the compound.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's there for effect, but it's not really not really correct in how it's set up. And we see Spirit on the very right of the photo of the cover.
She gets a thumbs up.
Yeah, she's looking hot.
It almost Commandy's being thrown like to the Walking Dead. You know that those are the monsters, right?
Yeah, that's very very accurate. I'm going to say a B+ on the cover. And the interior art, I'm going to say it's very consistent with what we had last issue. So I'm going to say a B on the interior art. I really like the way this story is proceeding, even though, you know, some incredulous moments of, you know, like how easily they got him back into the race. But the whole development of the story and him trying to escape and the way Click Clack is in it and everything, I think very solid. So I'm going to say a B+ on the story also. And overall, I'm going to give this book a B+.
I'm with you. I'm not even going to. I'm with you 100%. I can't deviate. I love the little nods in the artwork. Like you see the, I don't know what the hell that's supposed to be, a monkey or something, and he's reading the racing tips in the newspaper right on the first splash page. Then you have the touts there smoking cigarettes as they're watching the race. It's great. Yeah, I agree with you.
Clever stuff.
Very clever. This is a great book.
Yeah. So that's it for Commandy 12 and 13. And, you know, obviously we're doing these sporadically, but Dave and I will get to 14 and 15 in the not-too-distant future if you want to read ahead. Otherwise, I hope you're enjoying this. Just, you know, to keep letting everybody know, you know, we're trying to get this on as many platforms for downloading as possible. So I would say if you've been able to download it without a problem, if you can go in and give us a high rating on whatever platform that is, we'd appreciate it. If you are having difficulty getting it on the platform you want and have to search it out somewhere else, let us know, and we will make every effort to get it on whatever platform you do use. We are trying to expand as much as possible. We are also, we have our email address open again, backtothebins@gmail.com. And if you want to send us any kind of feedback on this, you could do it on the email or on our Facebook page. So we look forward to hearing from people on what you think, and just let us know. If you're giving us high ratings, we're happy. If you're giving us poor ratings, I would honestly prefer that you send us a message, and I am open to constructive criticism. But, you know, whatever criticism you have, we will address. And if we disagree, we'll let you know. If we do agree, we'll try and make whatever we do better. But thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.